Welcome to today's Innovative Ideas podcast. We're talking this afternoon with Art Cardin, assistant professor of economics and business at Rhodes College in Memphis, Tennessee, as well as a regular contributor to Forbes.com. Art, I wanted to talk to you today about an article that you've written and a number of studies that you've done that touch on the question of whether or not Walmart has an effect on obesity, and if so, what direction does the effect go? Does it increase? Does it decrease? And how we should understand Walmart's weight effect, as you term it in a Forbes article, in light of its other advantages. And we're taking off on a Walmart article called Walmart's Weight Effect in Forbes that you did back in June 2009. And there you said, based on data you gathered on Walmart discount stores, supercenters, Sam's Club, Costco's, and BJ's, that there was a small but still statistically significant effect of Walmart's on obesity and body mass index, and it was in terms of reducing that. You've gone on to look more precisely at the effect of Walmart supercenters. You could talk about how you got interested in the area and how you approached the question, what you found so far.
Well, the paper began as part of a series of studies that I and a co-author, actually a couple of co-authors, have done on questions related to Walmart more generally. And one of my co-authors, an expert on obesity, Charles Cordemanche, has written a handful of papers on gas prices and obesity, cigarette prices and obesity, and a handful of other things. And we decided basically to combine data that we had on Walmart with data that we could find on obesity to see what kind of story emerged. In the first version of the study that circulated, that was the basis for the Forbes piece, we found no real effect from supercenters. So a Walmart discount store doesn't sell groceries. A supercenter does sell groceries. And then Sam's Club, BJ's, Costco are membership warehouse clubs. It's still kind of a mix of everything. We found little effect of supercenters, but we found actually a negative effect on the probability of obesity and a body mass index from Walmart discount stores and Sam's Club, Costco's, BJ's, wholesale clubs. And we found this kind of interesting that the effect was trivially small, but we thought that perhaps this could be indirect evidence that Walmart is increasing our real income and thereby inducing us perhaps to slightly higher quality stuff. After we looked at the data with more detail, we got a suggestion from a journal referee that we change our identification strategy a little bit. And by using what's called an instrumental variable strategy that allowed us to isolate very precisely the effect of Super Walmart, we found that the effects that we'd estimated for regular Walmart and Sam's Club were basically similar. But the story that emerged was this very, very large effect of Super Walmart on obesity. We found that you can explain roughly 11%, give or take, of the increase in obesity since the late 1980s simply in terms of the growth of Super Walmart. So this provides what we think is an interesting story. On one hand, Sam's Club, Costco, BJ's Wholesale Club, and regular Walmart discount stores might reduce obesity, albeit ever so slightly, by increasing our real incomes or by providing some constraints on how we shop. But Super Walmart, which has an enormous cost advantage relative to its competitors, and which actually has been shown to reduce grocery prices in some places, might actually be reducing food prices so much that we're getting a little bit heavier,
right,
as a result of having access to Super Walmart.
Right, and the reason this is important, and you wrote about this in a terrific long paper with you and your co-author Charles Cordemanche, Supersizing Supercenters, you note that the percentage of people between 1960 and 2006 who are considered overweight rose from 43% to 67% of the population, while the obesity rate in the U.S. grew from 13% to 34%. So it's a big question. You also point out that the U.S. spends well over $100 billion every year just treating the health effects from obesity.
Right.
And you also discuss some very interesting other literature on obesity where you just simply point out, and this is the reason I like your research, is it fits really well into a big body of research that talks about why it is that our waistlines are getting bigger, not just in the U.S., but across the developed world.
Right.
It's technological progress, so there's real falling food prices. Food is getting cheaper. We're shifting from an agricultural manufacturing society, obviously, into a more sedentary, service-oriented society, so we're spending a lot of time sitting in front of our computers.
Right.
Googling and typing, but not much lifting anything heavier than a coffee mug.
Right.
And then technological innovations that have reduced the time it requires to make food. So I think David Cutler, which you cite his research, at one point pointed out that if you wanted French fries, 75 years ago, you could make them, but you had to go to the grocery store and get the potato and then take them home and then slice them and then fry them. And it took you a while, and it was relatively expensive. Food production has made that fast and cheap. And then the piece you add to this that's very important is you show that Walmart, their enormous innovation in the field is not making things, it's distributing them, and they're right. the best in the world at it. But the counterpoint you make is all of these things are tremendously good for society and for the poor at large. All of these technological innovations, et cetera, that lower the price of things are good. So how do we look at the ledger for Walmart then and understand, well, gee, it's part of this enormous technological shift that is making us heavier, but a lot of these things we think are valuable.
Right. Yeah. In looking at Walmart, one of the things that has emerged as we've done this research is I think the trying to do some sort of social cost-benefit accounting where we can decide whether Walmart is objectively good or objectively bad is quite honestly impossible because there's so many different margins on which a firm like Walmart or any change affects our day-to-day lives that really measuring everything is exceptionally difficult. First of all, to do the actual measurement and then to weight everything appropriately, I think would require knowledge that's probably above and beyond us. Now that said, in terms of the Super Walmart effect on obesity, so we find, Super Walmart explains 10 to 11% or so of the increase in obesity over the last two decades, but the increased medical expenditure associated with Super Walmart-related obesity only offsets about 6% of consumer savings from shopping at Super Walmart. So yes, it's true that I go to Super Walmart, or Super Walmart comes in and lowers food prices, and therefore I eat more Twinkies and more French fries and more what have you, just generally consume more calories, but the increase in my welfare associated with having access to Walmart's low prices is much, much, much greater than the offsetting cost associated with Super Walmart-driven obesity. And then furthermore, what we hope to do in future work is, in focusing very narrowly on obesity, is seeing if we can better refine our estimates of the Walmart discount store effect and the Sam's Club effect, and see if we can come up with a more general estimate of the effect of big box retail writ large on people's waistlines. And that's probably another couple of papers off, but what we're doing now is sort of a step in that direction.
And you raised a very interesting question here. I think in a podcast you did with St. Lawrence University, you talked about how Walmart's motto is now save money, live better.
Yeah.
And particularly for lower income people, so if they're spending less on food, of course, they're also consuming more food, but they've also got more money to spend on education
right.
and housing and everything else in their lives. So policies that policymakers more tuned and said, well, we need to make food more expensive or make unhealthy food more expensive is you're actually telling them that you need to shift resources out of these other things and put them back in food, which would seem to be kind of counterintuitive in terms of are we really improving these people's lives by making food more expensive?
Right. Yeah, the issue there is as people get richer, the proportion of their budget that they spend on food tends to fall. So when we make food more expensive, a couple of things happen. First of all, it's obvious that what we have to give up to get each additional unit of food increases. So that can be good or bad, but it also makes every dollar in our pocket go a little bit less far than it did previously. So in fact, actually, by making food more expensive, by taxing it, say by taxing sugary foods or what have you, what we're doing is we're reducing the length to which everybody's dollar will go, and on net we're making everybody worse off, particularly the poor who can least afford it. So if unhealthy food is what we call an inferior good and we reduce people's real income by, say, increasing the price of food or by increasing taxes or what have you, then we might actually see the proportion of their diet that consists of unhealthy food increase. And I'm not sure that's the direction in which we want to go.
But while we also recognize that, look, obesity comes with some costs
right.
to personal health, and the cost may be so far down the line that individuals may not, it's hard to, of course, ever say when is an individual behaving rationally. Some people
right.
may think it's perfectly rational to choose
right.
the cheeseburger now and worry about the heart attack later,
right.
Especially if you can take a statin to lower your risk of having a heart attack.
Right.
But assuming that obesity is something we should have a bit less of because of the externalities that it imposes on society in terms of higher medical bills, what other kinds of policies do you think we should look at that could more intelligently address obesity without hitting these other trade-offs and making food or other things more expensive for low-income people?
Yeah, well, first of all, the idea that obesity creates an externality, I think, is somewhat incorrect, because the only reason that obesity creates any kind of externality in any kind of sense is that Medicare and Medicaid, which are financed by taxpayers, are picking up about half the bill for obesity-related health costs. So if you eliminate Medicare and Medicaid, or if you allow people to bear the full cost and enjoy the full benefits of their private decisions, then the externality completely goes away. And I can say something like, I disagree with your private choices, but the idea that your private choices are somehow imposing a cost on me that goes away if it's not occurring through the health system.
So the third-party payment, third-party payment system, in effect, could encourage people to at least not think as clearly as they would otherwise about the cost of their behaviors because they don't bear anything near the full cost of those decisions.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. The decision to supersize a meal at McDonald's. So economists talk about making decisions at the margin. So we're weighing, say, the cost and benefits of supersizing a Big Mac value meal at McDonald's. So for an extra 39 cents or 59 cents or whatever, we get more fries and a bigger drink. If I know that someone else is going to pick up the bill for the heart attack I'm going to have someday because of that, then the cost to me of supersizing that meal is lower, and therefore I'm more likely to do it. If I know that I'm going to foot the entire bill for my heart attack, then I have less of an incentive to get the supersized Big Mac meal.
You also talk about how agricultural subsidies
right.
distort the food selection that we see, or at least the prices of the food selection that we see.
Right. Yeah, there's a popular graph that's going around the internet that asks, why is a Big Mac so much cheaper than a salad? And it talks about the degree to which the inputs into a Big Mac, say meat, for example, are subsidized relative to the subsidies that go to things like spinach and whatnot. And this is where I think policymakers can gain some ground in terms of fighting obesity in a meaningful way. Subsidies to agriculture, particularly subsidies to unhealthy foods, like, say, for example, red meat, the degree that that's unhealthy, or highly processed corn derivatives, subsidies to those kinds of products, if we can eliminate those, so if we eliminate the subsidies and are able to cut taxes at the same time, then people reallocate their spending away from consumption of unhealthy food, and yet they're better off because they have more disposable income as a result of the tax.
So if you're raising the real income of the poor, they will substitute for some of these healthier foods, but if you're also raising the price in effect of some of these unhealthier foods, that, look, they can still make the choice, but we are, in effect, subsidizing unhealthy choices by subsidizing things like corn and soybean oil.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, there's a huge array of subsidies that I think are in part responsible for the modern obesity epidemic, to the degree that we might want to call it an epidemic. The first is direct subsidies to the production of unhealthy foods. It's been argued that high fructose corn syrup doesn't metabolize as rapidly as pure sugar. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, because I don't have the scientific competence. But if that is true, then subsidies that give us Coca-Cola sweetened with high fructose corn syrup are making us fatter relative to a world in which we drank Coca-Cola that was sweetened with actual sugar.
Last thought for you. As we become wealthier as a society, we face an increased number of choices, and perhaps some of them that we think now maybe not as good as ones we used to have. But on the whole, it seems that we need to approach this obesity question with a little bit of temperance, because so many of the factors driving it, technological innovation, increased leisure time that allows us to consume more food and sit around and watch TV and surf the internet, all of these things are positive. So would you call this a modern externality that we should learn to live with, in a sense? Where do you think this discussion is going?
I'm really not certain. I don't like the use of externality to describe it, because externality is a technical term, and often when people talk about obesity producing externalities, they mean either policy-created externalities or externalities that aren't really actionable in a meaningful sense. So, for example, if I don't like the color of your shirt, I can say that that's an externality. Or say, for example, if you don't like the fact that I have a little bit more heft around my waistline than you would like, that's an externality. At some point, we have to draw a line and say right trump externalities, and say that your aesthetic preferences or my aesthetic preferences are not a legitimate basis for vetoing others' decisions.
But this should exist in a world where more people are bearing the responsibilities and the consequences of their own decisions.
Absolutely. 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 Now, as for the technological issue, it is true that we have to accept some chaff with the wheat of technological change, but if we say something like we need to halt technological progress because it's created obesity, that's being penny-wise and pound-foolish.
Like saying we should have never discovered the car because then we got the suburbs.
Right, exactly, exactly. Yeah, or in the case of the car, failing to recognize the relevant trade-offs, saying, okay, well, we have air pollution because of the automobile. Well, we have a certain type of air pollution because of the automobile, but it's actually a cleaner type of air pollution in urban areas. Whereas 100, 150 years ago, city dwellers were breathing pulverized horse manure. That's much less of a problem than breathing auto exhaust is today.
Exactly. Well, Professor Carden, thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to having you on Innovative Ideas Podcast again.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.